When the knowledge that we have is loving knowledge, because we have knowledge of how things work and the basic understanding that we have of things around us, natural things and man-made things, but we also have, in certain contexts, certain situations, i.e. relationships, what we call loving knowledge, the knowledge that we have of a loved one. In that case, what we carry inside is no longer just a concept. It's something else, something very particular. We call it a secret. Does that make any sense? We have thoughts or ideas, to speak more vaguely, or concepts. And then, in the context of relationships, there's a very particular knowledge that we have, which produces something inside of us, which is no longer just a concept, but which we call a secret. That loving understanding, a quasi-presence that we have within us of loved ones, of friends, of persons who are dear to us. Thomas Aquinas speaks of the verbum cordis, the logos of the heart. And so we're talking about, in this case, also an interior fruit, so to speak. When we speak of the logos, we're speaking, when we're trying to speak, and find in our experience that which expresses what is most intimate. So it's important to situate that, to try to understand what exactly John is revealing to us about this mystery of God, the mysterious God, whom we want to know. That's why we probe, because we want to know the one who loves us. And so we're talking about an interior something, more than just an abstract concept, but like a secret. And so compare the two. In the beginning was the Word, or the Logos, and this other revelation of the second person of the Trinity, the Son, which we find elsewhere in John's Gospel and in the other Gospels. A Son is an exterior fruit. A secret, the verbum of the heart, the logos of the heart, is an interior fruit. Does that make sense? I told you to put on your thinking caps. And so logos actually reveals something more intimate than Son. Even though logos sounds very abstract and we're having a very difficult time envisioning it, it's not about envisioning. God is never to be envisioned. You will always be at a loss. He is to be touched in faith. So logos reveals something even more intimate about the relationship between the second person of the Trinity and the first person of the Trinity. Okay? So I guess it's pretty clear, right? So... thank you very much for coming. It's very important to situate and to understand, interestingly, that as we call them the divine persons, why did God have to complicate things and be three in one? It makes things so much more difficult. He's God. The divine persons are always revealed to us in terms of their relationship with one another. You'll notice that every revelation about any one of the persons of the Trinity is always about their relationship. It's always in terms of relationship to the other persons. That's the only way that they can be revealed, so that in the end we not have three distinct beings and therefore three gods. So revealing them in relation to one another in the perfect oneness and simplicity of God. Nothing of the Trinity eliminates the perfect simplicity of God. There is no one simpler than God. So logos is a relationship, Son is a relationship, Paraclete is a relationship. And it is revealed to us, therefore, here in the prologue, that in God there is this, okay, don't try to imagine it, but go ahead, and eternal interior procession. The Son is forever coming forth from the Father, and he doesn't get tired of it. And the third person of the Trinity forever comes forth from the first and the second person of the Trinity. There is an eternal coming forth, but it's not exterior. It is perfectly interior. So you have one person proceeding from an other person, and from these two persons, another person proceeds, all within the perfect simplicity of God, a simplicity which is entirely beyond our imagination.